Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head. Attitude, bitch.
Now, I do believe that's the first time in the history of the show that we've actually let that full intro play. Hi, everybody. No, I am not a different host. I'm your normal host. My name is Harry Broadhurst, even though I don't sound like Harry. I have a sinus infection. I'm going to do the best I can. I will have to mute my microphone every now and then so I can hack up along. Otherwise, though, joining me right now, the third man, Andrew Ballas.
Woohoo, that's me.
We will hear from Tony Acero a little bit later on in tonight's episode. Unfortunately, there were transportation issues with the Thugster, and as we all know on this show, Thugster Trump's show.
I mean, that's fair logic.
I mean, do you want to be on the business end, on the business side of the Thugster? I dare say not.
I don't know her well enough. I don't have the history of why it's Thugster and how evil she really is. You know, I've only been here a year.
Just trust us when you say you don't want to end up on the business end of the Thugster.
Okay.
Although,
I guess I will.
To be fair, being on the business side of the Thugster might have been better than watching tonight's episode of Raw.
Oh, I'm glad it wasn't just me. Yeah, that's painful. I think I walked off and did chores at some point.
It had a few moments here and there, like a couple of things that stood out as far as in terms of redeeming quality. Like Seth and Dolph was pretty good, but that's pretty much what you'd expect from Seth and Dolph.
Yeah, exactly. It was connected dots.
The opening and the closing match is kind of tied together, so we're going to lump those together in one lump sum here. I figure it would make sense to do that. So let's go ahead and get started here as we open the show with general manager-elect now, Baron Corbin, due to the fact that Braun Strowman has to have elbow surgery and might miss the TLC pay-per-view. Rumors are the timeline has him back in time for the show. Secondary thought is that there is somebody planned to take his spot at that show. The idea there might be a returning to WWE John Cena. Regardless. Him. What the hell nickname did they give Lashley now? What the kind of
Almighty.
Uh-huh. So he's Bruce or Evan?
I mean, whichever movie you liked better, I guess, because they were both kind of eh.
Well, he's definitely not Jim Carrey. I don't know if he's Steve Carell.
Is he a 40-year-old virgin?
Does Leo Rush count?
Well, he's only a 24-year-old virgin then, so we're only like a little over halfway there then.
Never mind. Not going to explain that joke any further. Moving on.
I mean, I could have taken it a few ways. I went with that one. You know,
yes.
I kind of see where you could have gone with that.
Let's maintain some shred of decency here. And the one man of this trio that we actually do like on this show, the Scottish psychopath, Drew McIntyre, they open up the show to brag about what they did to Strowman last week on Raw. We get a clip package of that. Corbin says that Strowman won't be cleared in time for TLC, and that if he's not, then Corbin will win by forfeit. Nowadays, when it comes to Monday Night Raw, you're either with Corbin or you're against him, which I feel is a storyline we've seen time and time again on this show. The lights eventually go out, the guitar strums, and Elias has words for Bobby Lashley. Elias is witty, as per usual, but does nothing really original in this material. Although he does get the entire arena to chant, that Bobby Lashley sucks. Really not that great of an accomplishment considering Bobby Lashley. Regardless, that leads into our opening contest, which will be Lashley versus Elias. But first, I want to get your thoughts on the opening segment, Andrew.
It was an opening segment. Like, there was nothing of note, nothing of merit. The only talking point I could even derive from it was, why is Drew McIntyre always in, like, these random throw-together, like, three-man heel teams kind of thing? And weren't him and Dolph still cool? Like, why is Dolph suddenly split off from this, and it's just, like, the three big guys against the one really big guy? So it's like,
let's see if my inability to speak correctly actually helps me here. You ready?
Because he's vascular, damn it!
That helped a little bit, actually, yeah.
That wasn't bad.
No, it wasn't. Granted, the Peter Brady voice crack right there didn't help much, but, you know,
well,
the impression was still
good. You know. Take what you can get today, man. That's all I'm saying. I was only supposed to be a producer tonight.
And then Thugster had to ruin it all.
It's cool. I forgive you, Sophia. Anywho, moving on. Our opening contest
one
fall.
You went back on that one real fast. Like, try not to say anything negative about Thugster. We're sorry. We love you. Praise be to Thugster. Don't hurt me. That was funny.
I'm already not feeling well. I wouldn't stand a chance in a fair fight, let alone one where I'm handicapped.
Fair enough.
Our opening contest scheduled for one fall.
One fall.
Thank you. When Tony's not here, we take advantage of that gimmick. Anyway.
A little bit.
Features Lashley versus Elias. Eventually, Leo Rush pulls out a referee for a disqualification off of a top rope elbow drop, a move that I like to dub Hail to the King in honor of Randy Savage. However, Baron Corbin hops on the stick and announces that this match is now no disqualification, which leads to a 4-on-1, well, 3-on-1, I guess Leo doesn't technically get involved, assault on Elias at ringside. The reverse water wheel slam, that would be the inverted Alabama slammer for those keeping track at home, into the ring steps, and then a ring-circling spear by Bobby Lashley leads to a one-knee post cover, come on, baby, Chris Jericho WCW style, and the pinfall victory for Lashley at 13 minutes and 58 seconds. Your thoughts?
Mm-hmm. What do you want me to say? It's the same shit Baron Corbin's been doing since he had GM power. Oh, God, this is going against the heels. I forgot to say it was a no disqualification. False count anywhere. Handicap TLC machine gun death fight. Yep, that's right. You're like, what the fuck? Like, the gimmick is tired. And so is Corbin. Ugh.
Well, it gets even more tired in the main event scheduled for one fall.
I already did it once. Don't milk it.
Fine, Grumpus. As general manager-elect, because they're going to run that into the ground for the next 4 fucking weeks, Baron Corbin takes on Finn Balor. According to Larry's Raw review over at 411, this is the 7th time they've done this match on television this year already.
Really?
Twice on pay-per-view. Twice on pay-per-view, 5 times on TV. One of those pay-per-view matches I was in attendance for.
Was that the Demon Squash match?
No, that was the... I think that was the Corbin win, actually.
You got the bad one.
Yeah, no, the Demon Squash was SummerSlam. I was there for Extreme Rules.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I knew they faced each other quite a few times. I was just not keeping count and really had no interest because we've seen it a 9 billion fucking times.
Well, Balor goes for the coup de grace. Graw, Corey. Graw. And Corbin rolls out of the ring. Corbin once again gets on the stick. Somebody should tell the stick this. He wouldn't have Corbin nowhere near him. Anyway, moving on. Long way to go for a bad joke. Sorry. and mentions that this is now a handicap match, and that Corbin's partner is Drew McIntyre. McIntyre comes down, Balor with a tope con hilo, although I guess technically would that have been a plancha con hilo since he went over the top? Because tope is through the top in the middle, planches over the top, I think. Either way.
They still call it a tope con hilo because you can't do a con hilo through the middle, really. It comes off more like a cannonball.
Well, that's how Homicide does it.
All right, let's keep it this way. People still call Frankensteiners Hurricane Ranas when Hurricane Rana literally means Hurricane, like, you know, a spin with pin, because con, Rana, Rana means pin. So if somebody ain't fucking getting pinned, it ain't a fucking Hurricane Rana. So there's a lot of phrases and words and descriptions misused often.
Either way, the dive puts down McIntyre. John Woo kick puts Corbin into the timekeeper's area. However, McIntyre comes back with a shot and sends Balor into the barricade. Back inside of the ring, it's a Claymore kick for the 2-on-1 finish at 13 minutes and 30 seconds. Post-match, it is whatever the fuck they're calling Lashley finisher, because I don't think they've given that big ending rip-off a name. The end of days, and another Claymore to leave Balor laid out on the canvas, and Corbin, Lashley, and McIntyre standing tall when Raw goes off the air.
Yeah, that was the ending, folks. The ending, much like the beginning, is a tired gimmick that we're going to get very sick of if you're not already sick of, and I could care less. And you know how much I love Drew McIntyre. I go a little on the as Chris Platt likes to say on a couple shows that he does, I go on the Fandango side of things for Drew McIntyre, and still I don't give a shit about this trio, regardless of the McIntyre effect. So, yeah, good job, WWE. Good job.
They're managing to make me give negative fucks about something Drew McIntyre is doing.
Exactly.
I don't even hate Bobby Lashley. I actually thought Lashley was very entertaining in TNA/Impact Wrestling.
I agree with you TNA/Impact.
The gives no fucks Lashley that was running around Impact like he owned the place was fantastic. This watered down version of Lashley that likes to point at his ass does nothing for anybody. He's pointing at his ass.
it really does
lend itself to the Vince voice, doesn't it?
It really, really does, because it doesn't quite sound like like an imitation of Pritchard doing it. It kind of sounds like your own thing. Because you had that little extra growl with the sickness, yeah. It's like you're down with the sickness. Yes, a little disturbed coming in.
Ooh, wow. Nah, not quite deep enough for that.
Not quite.
Interesting story. We'll be seeing them as a belated birthday present next year.
Disturbed or Vince McMahon?
Disturbed.
No, just checking. Their new album's not bad, though.
Disturbed and Nothing More, I believe, is the two groups that are performing together. It's 6 days after my birthday. It's a belated birthday present from a friend of mine.
Never heard of Nothing More. Heard of Nevermore, but World Dane died, I think, last year, so they're not getting back together. But, yeah, I have no clue who Nothing More is.
I'll send you a song once we're off the air. You can give them a thought.
Sounds like a plan.
Cool. All right, let's get back to the show.
See, this is what it's come to. We're talking about concert plans for 2019 rather than talking about this episode of Raw in 2018.
Hey, we talked about the Rams game last week because, you know, Raw was so riveting.
Well, Raw got lucky tonight. It was Houston and Tennessee and the Nobody Gives a Fuck Classic.
We just said because it was a close game for a while and then Houston just kind of pulled away.
Yeah, well, it's Tennessee. If you ever expect Tennessee to succeed, they're sure to screw. Okay, let's get back to Raw. Backstage, Corbin fires the production
assistant. You're about a yard short, ask the Rams.
Womp, womp, womp. Okay. Hey. Corbin fires a production assistant who lowered the lights for Elias. Alexa Bliss comes over, and her and Corbin flirt back and forth. Oh, dear God, don't make that a thing. Corbin puts Alexa in charge of the women's division. Alexa lets Corbin know that that guy was FaceTiming with his kids backstage at the show anyway, so who needs somebody like him just to be an ultra bitch?
I mean, it's completely in her wheelhouse. Why wouldn't she say that? You fired a guy who was a good husband and a good father. Yeah, good job, Baron.
So what are the odds that Alexa tries to, like, power play and overthrow Corbin for the GM role down the road anyway? Say, in 3 weeks after TLC. I don't want to control just the women's division. I want the entire damn roster. Fuck you.
I say it's 50-50 because it's either going to be Alexa power playing for all of Raw or the women's division essentially usurping Alexa and kind of forcing her back into active duty if she's off of concussion protocol, basically. So I think it was about 50-50. Why, where are you at with it?
I think that Alexa would be more entertaining in charge of the show than Baron is.
Okay, that's a low bar, buddy. Try again.
If I have to see one of them for six segments of show, who would you rather it be?
Okay, that's not fair because we're all guys that swing a certain way. So, of course, I'd rather see Alexa Bliss for, like, an hour of the show. Good God, that's not even fair. That's house money you're playing with. Damn.
But even from a character perspective, I'd still rather see Alexa for six segments of show over Corbin.
Again, not fair. Alexa has a character. Corbin doesn't.
That's kind of the point, though. It's similar to that AJ Lee role. It's similar to that AJ Lee role, and thankfully Tony's not here to fawn over her. That
I was about to say, did you just summon Tony?
You threw me off. Give me a second here. It gives you a character to play off of in the GM role rather than having to deal with the nothingness that is Corbin.
Aw, Puddin.
There we go. Working on summoning Tony, one AJ Lee reference after the other.
Oh, don't worry. When he's actually in the queue, I'm going to hit his old Greg DeMarco intro, too.
Oh, that's fantastic.
You'll know it when you hear it, trust me.
I mean, I have heard Steve Cook's, so I can only imagine that Tony's is similar.
All right, we get back to the show with highlights of what has happened thus far in the Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose feud. We then get a video of Ambrose at his doctor's office getting shots. We're supposed to think that this is some big crazy reveal. This is a guy who used to wrestle around glass. Needles probably aren't that big a deal to him.
No, you know what this was for. It was for all the Ambrose fangirls who, like, just fainted because Twitter collectively blew up because, you know, Ambrose unbuckled his pants and pulled them down a little bit. Good God, you should have seen all
the pelvis.
It was fantastic.
The fact that Ambrose showed part of his pelvis?
Yes, yes. The women collectively lost their minds. It was fantastically amusing.
The sound of ovaries gushing could be heard for miles.
Yes, there was definitely mops and cleanups on different aisles all over the world.
What did you think of Ambrose's promo?
It was hollow, to put it nicely. Like, he said nothing. He buried Milwaukee. Well, good job. Heel 101.
Not that hard
that
to
place,
do.
That place smells funky or whatever. He's got nose issues because everything smells weird to him lately.
What's that
and,
smell?
Yeah. And then, okay, Seth's only doing an open challenge because I'm not there. Yeah, that's heel 101 right there, too. And he just looked generally kind of disinterested. And for as much as I bought into what he said last week and the week before that, even though he wasn't given great material to work with, yeah, this one felt like phoning it in, like, and then some. Why, did you feel differently?
I didn't honestly have a strong opinion one way or another on this one. I honestly think the big takeaway here is the whole injection thing to show the commitment there. And, yeah, I get that there's going to be the perverse crowd of the fangirls that are going to be ooing and awing and ooing and awing and oh, and ooh. Fuck it, never mind. I can't get my voice high enough right now to imitate them in order to make that seem relevant there. But my point being is that it's going to appeal to a certain group of fangirl in one sense there, but from a traditional wrestling perspective, it doesn't really do anything to make me want to see the match any more than I already do. I have no doubt the match is going to be good, but this did nothing to build any interest in seeing the match to me, if that makes sense.
Also, to be fair, you know, it's a nice balance because we did just get done talking about who would we rather see for six segments, Alexa Bliss and or Baron Corbin, and we went the certain audience kind of way with picking Alexa Bliss. So, you know, it's equality. You got to give the girls something they like too. And Ambrose is.
Sorry, wrong button. Continue.
I was going to just say Ambrose is in high demand at the moment. Renee's going to have some competition.
Well, you know why Ambrose is in high demand at the moment, don't you?
Why?
Hold on. Because
Dean fucking Ambrose.
I forgot we had that.
Oh, I found another one here that I'm going to start ripping off going forward, too, anytime we have to talk about Corbin.
Well, push a button,
I assume you know, well, I have to find it again because I scrolled up in order to find Dean fucking Ambrose.
Oh, okay.
But give me a second here while I do that. It's all for time.
That'll do it for this week's edition of Baron Corbin Sucks.
Ah, yes, DeMarco's old show gimmick. And hey, you just said we were stalling for time. Was that you segueing into the next segment? Because I don't actually remember if it came on next. I just remember, I think.
No, it was after the handicap tag, but it's close.
Handicap.
That would have been a quality segue.
However.
That would have been. Damn.
Instead, we talk about the revival getting fucked.
And
again.
Not in the way that anybody would enjoy watching.
Wait, what?
What?
The views and opinions of Andrew Ballas do not necessarily reflect those.
Hey, there's a certain audience, and, you know, being the elite made fucking the revival really popular, and possessed Cody just brought it back, or now I should say depossessed Cody. So, hey, you know what? Fucking the revival. It's a thing. 2018, man.
They rightfully come out and complain about the fact that it was a 3-on-2 handicap match last week, stating that they are tag team experts and the tag team match is 2-on-2. And for people who claim to respect tradition as much as the Lucha House Party do, for them to do what they did to the tag team division was incredibly disrespectful. It is then announced by JoJo that this is a Lucha House Party rules. Therefore, it is once again 3-on-2 because fuck them. I think that about accurately sums up the segment. Lince Dorado pins Scott Dawson with the Shooting Star Press. In case you're wondering, Michael Cole, Scott Dawson is the bald one. Dash Wilder has hair. He's also Australian, but that's neither here nor there. Dawson bald, Dash has hair. Can we move the fuck past
this? They look exactly alike, just like the Usos. It's hard to tell the difference, man.
Can we move past this, please? The Revival deserves so much more. Like, I wouldn't even be opposed to a straight-up 2-on-2 tag match between Lince and Kalisto against Dash and Dawson. I think that match could be fucking fantastic if they gave it some time. But this 3-on-2 handicap bullshit and giving them 2.5 minutes, what does this do for anybody?
It gives the announcers plenty of time to bury the house party rules as being asinine, and it's basically a handicap match and stupid and it's cheating. And Baron Corbin apparently didn't approve of this, even though he's supposed to have the omnipotent power and basically be able to do whatever he wants on Raw. Yet somehow he allows this to happen because it came from even higher than him and can't give the revival a teammate because reasons, man, reasons. You just had announcements and the announce team just bury the whole segment for, what was it, 3-4 minutes, however long the match lasted? That's why we have this. What was that?
2 minutes, 25 seconds.
Okay, so between the time they came down, 3 minutes. 3 minutes of complaining.
Well,
Real quick, we spent more time complaining about how bad Baron Corbin is than this match lasted.
That's not surprising. Lots of people do. Hell, DeMarco turned it into a gimmick for months.
He did. All right, back to what you were saying here, though.
Do you agree or disagree that they could have a very good tag team match, straight-up tag matches against each other?
Depends
Kalisto's worked well with the Revival in the past with the Lucha Dragons. You know, back when Sin Cara was a thing.
I don't disagree with you, but I think Metalik would need to be in there just because he's a little bigger than the other two, so it would lend a little more credence to them not pulling off a fluky, lucha, flippy, kick-in-the-face kind of magic spin kind of thing, and they could actually exchange holds a little more, and it would be a little more of a back-and-forth match. So it could be, but I don't really think Lince should be involved in it. He should be the outside guy with the pinatas.
Hype video once again for Lars Sullivan. I have been wrong before about NXT call-ups on both sides of the fence. I have said people would succeed when they fail. I have said people will fail when they succeed. The ones that I said would fail that have succeeded, the first one that springs to mind for me is Elias. I did not think that gimmick would work on the main roster. I thought Tyler Breeze would work on the main roster. I don't think there's any question that if he's given the proper time to develop in terms of personality on Raw, Lars Sullivan will be a success on the main roster. That dude is jacked. He's a strong worker. And for a guy his size, he's also a surprisingly decent promo. What are your thoughts on the freak, Lars Sullivan?
Why is he going on Raw? I mean, aside from...
Aside from the fact that
SmackDown is the land of opportunity and Raw is the land of the giants, like, why? Why would you have the freak, the monster from NXT, whatever, on the same show as the monster among men, and one of them's going to have to beat the other one? And you can't just have no finishes and bullshit happen to keep them both looking strong. That's asinine when you've got, you know, Bobby and Drew and AOP and Roman when he comes back and all this other stuff. So it feels like front loading, and I feel like if anybody's going to get lost in the wash, it's going to be the new guy. So I'm not really sure how he's going to resonate just because of where he's at.
Well, they said that they're still in a battle between Raw and SmackDown for his services. It's not officially confirmed that he's coming to Raw.
Oh, when did they say that?
Right before the hype video aired.
Oh, I totally.
I understand that you weren't paying attention. I understand that you weren't really paying attention to commentary. Usually I don't either, but that I did happen to catch. I was making a snack at the time.
I think I was doing chores intermittently and missed that one sentence. So, okay, that's good. If he ends up going to SmackDown somehow, he has a better chance of flourishing because they don't have a big guy, really. So, if he's on SmackDown, I think that's better. I mean, but Big Show, what's he doing? He's seconding a tag team, or thirding technically, but you know what I mean. Like, all their big guys are in a group together that face tag teams. Good job.
Now I kind of want to see Big E versus Lars Sullivan. That could be fun.
I agree. That could be. I like that. I like Sheamus versus Lars Sullivan, or Cesaro versus Lars Sullivan, or Samoa Joe versus Lars Sullivan. And, of course, Daniel Bryan and AJ Styles, but that's a given. But, you know, that would be fantastic if he's on SmackDown. On Raw, I think he loses and he just flounders.
See, I think Joe comes back to Raw if he doesn't leave in the next Superstar Shakeup, just because there's nothing left for him to do on SmackDown. They've already gotten all they could out of him, having run his course with the WWE champion.
I mean, he could win.
Although babyface Joe versus heel Bryan could be fun to watch. I don't know if we've ever had that dynamic between the two of them before.
I don't think so, because Joe was a heel in his ROH run, wasn't he?
Tweener more so, but Bryan was more of a tweener at the time as well. I mean, you go around telling people that they're going to get their fucking head kicked in, you're kind of a tweener.
Oh, yeah, but that's also ROH. They tried to be edgy back then.
True, pretty much everyone in ROH was a tweener back then.
Yeah, and I think Brian always kind of hedged more on the face-ish kind of side, I think. But I don't know. That's like, well, there's never been as defined of a line of, you know, sneaky shitbag heel and possible face if Joe goes that way. So that could be nice, actually, Joe versus Brian. And that would be a nice way to give Joe a belt, too, if he could take it off of Brian.
The closest I would say for Brian that we've seen to that dirty shitbag heel that you're referring to is maybe like the run against Homicide leading up to Final Battle 06.
I'll give you that one. Yeah, I vaguely remember that because that's around the time I started kind of getting back into wrestling with TNA and ROH. But yeah, I do remember that one a little bit.
All right, let's move on and talk about the segment that Nia Jax and her immediate family cares about and probably no one else. That is actually how I described the women's That is actually how I described the women's title match at TLC in our preview for tonight's episode. Ronda Rousey defends the Raw women's title against Nia Jax in a match that Nia Jax's immediate family and no one else cares about.
I mean, Twitter cares now because Twitter would want to see her lose because they broke beloved Becky's face.
She's being pushed for hurting somebody.
Again, I think we talked about this last week a little bit. I think she was going to get pushed regardless, and this just plays into it because it wasn't like it was serious maiming. Yes, concussions are no joke, but it's not like she broke her neck or anything like that, so it's still something to play off of when, you know, the shoot becomes a work, or when life starts imitating art, vice versa, that how that whole thing kind of goes. So it's wrestling. We've seen worse.
Nia cuts a promo talking about her championship history and talking about the rise and fall of Ronda Rousey coming soon to DVD and home in Blu-ray from WWE Home Video. No? Okay, never mind.
That's rude.
Huh? What was that, Andrew?
I said that was rude.
Do you miss home videos, too? I kind of do as well. I'm a big DVD.
I'll see him home videos.
Available on the network, ironically enough.
Indeed.
All right, let's talk about this Nia Jax promo, because I guess eventually we have to. She runs over the history of Ronda Rousey in the WWE, stating that her downfall started when she faced Nia back at Money in the Bank. That was the match where Alexa cashed in. They conveniently skip over the fact that Rousey dominated Alexa to get the title back at SummerSlam, then going to Survivor Series where Charlotte beat the crap out of Rousey in a disqualification loss. Nia then tries to do a Ronda Rousey impression, to which Larry states, "It's like she's trying to be Alexa Bliss, but has no personality to pull it off." He's not wrong.
I mean, he's not. And it seems like every heel has been trying to take from the Alexa Bliss bag last couple weeks since Alexa's been laid up. But it's also the most personality we've really seen out of Nia. Like, that was my takeaway from the stupid little impression is, it was bad. It was typical heel crap, and Alexa does it better. But she tried, and you could tell that even if she wasn't as convincing, she was still kind of having fun with it. And you see a little bit of that Nia that people liked, like during Ride Along when it was like her and Alexa and people were having fun, or when she was calling Byron Saxton and trying to, you know, have him tell her all these different things about foods and booty calls or God knows what the hell. I forget how that conversation went. But You got a little bit of Nia's personality mixed in with smarmy heel bullshit, just done poorly because her character hasn't been developed. So it would have come across a lot better if it wasn't Nia Jax, sadly.
She mocks the fact that Ronda has her champion's mottos and states that one of those mottos that she had is that a champion is at her best even on her worst day. To which Nia actually does get off a pretty decent line, saying that Ronda hasn't faced her worst day yet. That was an admittedly decent line.
Agreed.
Meanwhile, while Ronda has been degressing, the
disqualification at Money in the Bank, the disqualification and beat down at the hands of Charlotte at Survivor Series. Nia has been on a roll, winning the Evolution Battle Royal, breaking Becky's face, and being the sole survivor at Survivor Series. She then says that the top of the mountain in the Raw Women's Division belongs to her. Which is ironic. Never mind, I'm not going to say that. That's mean.
I was waiting for it. I had a feeling you were going that way. I'm glad you sidestepped it too.
It would be mean to say that wildebeests usually tend to stay more towards the bottom of the mountain.
Almost. Almost missed it.
Almost. Steer into the skid, Andrew. Steer into the skid. All right. Ronda Rousey comes out and confronts Nia and then claims that at TLC she's going to rip Nia's arm off and beat Charlotte Flair with it. Okay, that's actually kind of funny. And like somebody, I'm fully expecting somebody to like Mortal Kombat a video together of this on YouTube. Of like her fatality Nia Jax and then going after Charlotte backstage. I can't say fatality right now because I have a sinus infection, apparently.
I would like that, though. That'd be a good Botchamania ending. Someone call Matthew.
Yeah, let's get Matthew on the line and see what we can pull off here. Shout out to Botchamania. Make sure you guys check out Botchamania.com. Anywho. Since Nia is so eager to... Sorry, Scrubs moment. Since Nia is so eager to fight tonight... Why don't we go ahead and have a match for the title right here and right now? Nia sidesteps that, stating that she's not ready. However, what she is ready for is to stall for time. Sloth, stall for... Okay, that's getting old and hurting my throat. Let's go ahead and move on. Tamina is about to move in on the attack, but before Tamina can hurt herself once again, Natalya attempts to come down to ringside for the save and gets jumped by the Riot Squad as soon as she gets to ringside. We'll talk to Tony about his thoughts on this a little bit later, assuming Tony makes it onto the show. Overall, what did you make of this segment, Andrew?
I think you kind of already started with. It was nice to see a little bit of extra snark, so to speak, from Nia. And I liked how Nia kind of took Ronda poking fun at her with the whole, oh, what, are you two got a double date? You're going to break a nail? That's what. And then Nia just rolled with it. And she's like, actually, we do have double dates afterwards. And I really just got my nails done and all that other stuff. And then it turned into stalling for time. And then the way Natty came running down and the Riot Squad just completely blindsided her. It was obviously set up there. Yes, it's scripted, blah, 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 blah. But the way the camera didn't catch it until, like, as soon as Ruby Riott or whoever made contact initially, like, it just looked fun. And, like, the segment was pretty awful. The fact that Tamina didn't try to, like, tackle Ronda and stop her from immediately going to the outside to help Natty, and the skirmish kind of looked bad and clunky and could have been done a lot better or differently. Sure, that's one thing, but it was set up okay. I like the visual, and I guess heels are just banding together against the faces now, regardless of how much sense it really makes, just because they happen to be in sort of kind of not really intertwining storylines, maybe. Sure. What about you? What do you think?
We'll talk more about heels randomly aligning in order to help push the people's endeavors a little bit later on, because apparently the Baron Corbin booking is filling into the women's division now.
Oh, no.
Yes. At least he's not wrestling in the women's division.
I mean, he might win it if he did, though.
He's not Barona Corbina yet.
He could be. It's 2018. You can't tell him what he is and what he isn't.
God damn it. I need a second to recover from that. Okay, I'm good. Whew, I think. All right, let's move on here. The tag team titles are on the line next. We get a backstage promo. Earlier in the show, we got one from Drake Maverick talking about fear.
and the fact that he pissed himself, by which I mean he pressed a button in his pocket in order to make water run out of a tube down his leg. But the Authors of Pain punctuate the promo, as I believe it was Razor that said, "Laugh now, cry later."
Before the match,
Rude and Gable have a promo backstage, and they actually play off each other very well. A little surprised to see them actually kind of being treated like a serious tag team. I think both of us kind of expected that this was going to be a set-them-up-to-break-them-up situation. But they're actually developing into somewhat of a decent little tag team here. The match itself, well, I guess you could say they took the piss on the tag titles. Or at least on Bobby Roode's rope.
Yeah, that was unavoidable. So it was the easy route, but I'll give it to you because it makes the most sense.
I'm not happy with having to use that reference, nor was I happy with having to watch this.
That's why I really didn't. Kinda. I don't know. I don't know how much of that match I actually saw because it felt like there were just a lot of cuts to the back with Drake Maverick doing stupid shit with the robe, right? Like, did I miss stuff? Like, it seems like after Rude noticed he took the robe, like, it was focused more on Drake than it did the match, and I couldn't really remember anything happening in the match aside from the ending after, you know, the wonderful toilet robe moment. But, you know, like, did I miss something? Were there more interspersed moments in wrestling?
Honestly, I saw fuck all of it. Like, they focused in the back. I saw Gable getting beat up, but that was about the extent of it.
Because it was just really disjointed because the match started off all right, and then when Maverick pulled his bullshit with the robe, then the whole thing fell apart and it focused more on Maverick taking the robe into the back and literally urinating on it and then just causing Bobby Roode to stay distracted in the ring instead of go out and chase him, which would have made more sense if he gets out to go reclaim his property and then Gable gets screwed over by a 2-on-1 type thing. That would have been wrestling. This is shitty sitcom. Not even soap opera. This is just shitty sitcom. Like, this is like those Ashton Kutcher years of 2.5 Men. Like, fuck, dark times, man. Dark times.
So what you're saying is you want Bobby Roode chasing Drake Maverick around Benny Hill style like we saw with Rollins and Ambrose last week?
No. Chase Scooby-Doo style. Scooby-Doo style, where they're actually chasing each other. Exactly. Exactly. And then randomly there's a dog in there too. And that's the best part. The dog walks out of the one door, then they come out and they look at the dog, get confused, and then, you know, it continues. That would have been fantastic.
Only works if it was a Great Dane.
You can get a Great Dane. It's not like they don't exist in Milwaukee.
Milwaukee?
Yes. I did appreciate the Wayne's World reference. That's nice.
Alexa Bliss backstage meets up with Sasha Banks and Bayley and tells them that they will be having an open forum with the WWE Universe a little bit later in the show. We find out that, well, first, it's a match. Ember Moon taking on Alicia Fox.
That wasn't a match. Don't lie to us. Where's Crocodile Dundee when you need to be like, that's not a match. This is a match. And then go to something decent. Right.
Let's talk about the important news to come out of this segment, though. Braun Strowman's replacement in the Mixed Match Challenge is Curt Hawkins.
Okay,
so I'm going to fantasy book here. No, I'm going to fantasy book here. You ready?
Shoot.
Hawkins and Ember Moon win the entire tournament. Ember gets the pin in every single match except for the final, where Hawkins gets his moment and earns himself number 30 in the Royal Rumble.
Awful. Plus, wait, no. I don't. How many more weeks are left of this thing? Because I haven't even followed this year's Mixed Match Challenge, to be honest.
3. Tomorrow night has the Raw semifinals. Next Tuesday has the SmackDown semifinals. The following week has the Raw final and the SmackDown final. And then at TLC in 20 days,
will be Raw versus SmackDown. Whoever wins gets number 30 in the respective men's and women's rumbles.
It's cute, don't get me wrong, but I can't see them doing that because, the first match that they have, they're going to play it up the same way they did with Asuka's undefeated streak last year and, you know, her last mixed match challenge season, whatever you want to call it, and be like, well, if they win, then that breaks Hawkins' losing streak or whatever it is. So it'll be something they play up during the match. But the fact that there's one, like, do-or-die match, I don't know. Who are they facing?
They're facing Mahalisha.
Oh, that.
I'm telling you, it's entirely possible.
Possible, because that's just bad. Who's going to watch that?
The other match tomorrow night is Balor and Bayley against Lashley and Mickey, which could be theoretically interesting.
That could be, especially since Lashley and McIntyre are kind of joined together, so there's some intertwining of storylines. Sure. But, yeah, that first match is going to be awful. Ugh. I guess Jinder could be the one that technically gives Hawkins his win so he breaks his losing streak because Jinder seems to be jobber to the stars again. So that's good for Jinder.
Unless that star's name is No Way Jose. We'll get to that in a second.
I said
the term star used in the loosest translation possible.
He's Spanish. What do you expect? Not all translations line up. If we had Tony here, then he'd know.
Your thoughts on Ember and Alicia? The Eclipse lands for the pinfall at 1:50
seconds. Yes, that match didn't even last 2 minutes. The bell rang and Eclipse happened. Like, holy. You do not.
I care. Ember got a chance.
Ember was in it.
Yeah, that's why I care. I mean, I could give a fuck less about Alicia and all her crazy at this point, but I'm all for Ember getting a push.
Oh, I'm not even talking about the push. Just, you know, I enjoy Ember. Ember's Emberness. But, yeah, whatever. It
you
happens.
And Matthew
the right
Palmer
person
both.
Won. Indeed. But, yeah, so whatever. It happened. The right person went over. Next.
As Curt Hawkins is kind of celebrating the victory at ringside.
Oh, no. Harry has died, and there's still no Tony. Oh, no. What are we going to do?
As Curt Hawkins is celebrating the victory at ringside, I had to mute the microphone because I had a coughing fit there. No Way Jose congas his way out onto the stage. Ember somehow gets dragged into the dance line and looks none too pleased about it. I'm guessing that may have been a rib. But it leads us to our next contest in the ring when No Way Jose takes on Jinder Mahal. A coloss later, and Jinder Mahal picks up the win at 4.5 minutes. Your thoughts?
I think this is the first time we've seen Jinder win in a while, isn't it?
Sure as hell feels that way.
Yeah, like he lost to Elias, I'm pretty sure, or it was DQ. Yeah, he lost to Finn like 2 or 3 times in a row, or some combination of Finn and Bayley beat him and Alicia over and over and over again for almost a month. And yeah, and then he got destroyed by Brock. That wasn't a match, but he just got emasculated. So good for Jinder actually getting a win. Granted, it was over nobody. So there's something, and I guess it's to try to make him look legitimate for the mixed match challenge that he can maybe kind of sort of beat somebody maybe. But,
well, to be fair, everybody can kind of sort of maybe beat Curt Hawkins these days. 236 and counting, I believe Cole said was the number.
It's a fake number regardless, but yeah, whatever they want to go with, it's fine.
Let's get to the high spot of tonight's episode of Raw. Let's talk the IC Title Open Challenge.
Sure.
I'm not going to say that it's anything that we haven't seen from DC before. It's answered by Dolph Ziggler, as we talked about at the top of the show. It's nothing we haven't seen from these two before, but compared to the dreck that was the vast majority of the rest of the show tonight,
actually thought this was a pretty strong match and a surprising finish as well, because we almost never see Rollins use the superplex into the doing the deal for the pinfall. Shout out to Excalibur.
Yeah, I was wondering where you got that name for it from, but yeah. So, yeah, the Falcon Arrow finish was different.
Do you not watch PWG?
Why would I?
Oh, rat bastard.
I mean, not to mention, I also heard Excalibur on All In. Like, I'm pretty sure I could just put some sandpaper against a chalkboard and just make up words, too, and it'd be better. Like, oh, my God.
Hater. I actually really like Excalibur's commentary.
Well, maybe he had an off day for All In, because I thought that was fucking horrid.
Well, I'll tell you what. Once I get around to actually watching All In, I'll let you know what I thought.
You still haven't seen it yet?
It's a long, complicated series of events.
Okay, fair enough. Moving on. So, yes, the Falcon Arrow finish was different. It came later in the match than usual when everybody was tired. So, sure, logically it makes sense. But it was the same old kind of thing we've seen. Like, they've had to face each other 7 or 8 times on TV now. Like, if we're at that many for Balor and Corbin, we have to be at least that many for Dolph and Rollins. Did Larry happen
15.
To notate that one? 15. So twice as many. Hi. Fucking hell. Yeah. So it was par for the course. It was fine.
To be fair, though, I would rather watch 15 Seth and Dolph than 15 of anything related to Baron Corbin.
Yeah, but the only credit I'll give Corbin is at least his matches kind of look a little different. Like, 15 Seth and Dolph, kind of, you watch two, and you know what most of them are, except the finish may be slightly different if they're different time lengths. So I'd be like, he added a half of a couple extra moves here, and there's extra 3 minutes, or there's 3 less minutes, or, he did a superplex Falcon Arrow and won with it for a change. Wow. Okay. So,
you know what the only thing missing from this match was? A crowd counting down every 10 seconds.
Thank God they were in Milwaukee, not Pittsburgh.
Just because I know that still hurts you.
The open forum is next. They eventually get to a obviously planted fan who asks what Bayley and Sasha would do to change the division. Bayley said she's proud of the division as is and just wants more opportunities. Sasha says the first thing she would do is ship Alexa back to SmackDown, to which Bayley then tries to get cute and says that she would send Alexa back to hell where she came from.
That was a good Bayley burn. You stop it. It's Bayley.
Bayley is adorable, don't get me wrong, and the fact that she took the action figures in the Shop Zone commercial made me love her even more.
Yeah, I was hoping somebody would bring up the Shop WWE or whatever the fuck it's called, you know, commercial, because it was kind of cute for both of them, because Sasha usually doesn't look dumb. Like, she's usually too busy looking cool, and she looked dumb.
Well, Sasha got to cosplay as Rey Mysteriita. Rey Mysteriita? That works.
Sure. I'll give it to you. Even though it'd be...
I don't know what...
Reyna. It'd be Reyna, because Rey means king and Reyna means queen.
That's
so
true. Yeah, because the AAA women's title is Rhea de Reinas.
Yeah, Reyna de Reinas, queen of queens.
I think I earned some points knowing that, at least.
I mean, I'll give you... You did get a couple points. I was surprised you knew that.
This is what happens when Taya Valkyrie shows up in Impact Wrestling. I learn shit.
And she's Canadian. She just wrestles for AAA.
I'm aware that she's Canadian. She's Mexican.
It's funny. It's like saying Vampiro is the reason I love Lucha Libre. He's fucking Canadian too. God damn it.
Actually, you know who my favorite luchador is?
El Generico.
I swear, if you say Vampiro, oh my God, you set up the ring. At least he's helping orphans in Tijuana. So that's good.
He is, although that bastard Kevin Steen did try to have him killed.
He did, but, you know, it's fine. Kevin came over it, and, you know, they're out helping orphans together right now. You didn't know Kevin Steen had a face turn?
I did actually hear about that. It is now the Stenerico village, Orphan Village.
It is. It was all thanks to Shania Twain's concert.
It's a wonderful thing, really.
It's like it's a wonderful life. Now it's a Mexican version of a Christmas classic.
Coming soon to NBC, actually.
Or no, coming soon to Telemundo.
Or Univision.
Univision, si.
Which one of them actually airs AAA? I think it's Univision, so I'm going to go with that. All right, back to the segment here.
Eventually,
Mickey, Dana, and Alicia, because somehow Dana's a fucking heel again, jump Sasha and Bayley. However, Sasha and Bayley are able to clear the ring on their own, leaving to a 2-on-3 eventual handicap match down the road, because we need handicap matches in every division. Main event, tag team, and women's. Hell, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a 2-on-3 handicap match on tomorrow night's 205 Live. Well, Wednesday, technically. But it's taped tomorrow, so you know.
Uh-huh.
Be show, be material. That's all I'm saying.
205 Live isn't even the B show. That's like the W show.
Well, I meant as far as the my rant and rave about this particular segment. You give me a B episode of Raw, I give you B episode material.
That's fair. The only good thing I could say that kind of came from the Dana Brooke interference was that commentary tried to play it off, not as a heel turn, and more as in Dana's trying to do whatever she can to prove herself to Alexa Bliss. And, like, kind of makes sense, because Dana's been in the background. She's been doing nothing. She got sick of Titus Worldwide because she was kind of doing nothing and in the background, and they kept trying to tell her different things on how to win, and she was losing. So that does make some sense that she'd be frustrated and just trying to get her name out there. Maybe it's a reach. Don't get me wrong, but I didn't hate the explanation. Did you even catch that explanation?
I did, actually. And they were definitely putting over the fact that Dana was showing more aggression now too. Although, to be fair,
y'all wouldn't know entertainment if it slapped you in the face.
Fair play.
I've been a very vocal supporter of Dana Brooke throughout her WWE run. There have been times where
she... At least the top half of Dana Brooke, yes.
That is neither here nor there, good sir. Okay, it is actually kind of here and there. They basically go
everywhere depending
tonight
on what she's wearing.
They were very bouncy this evening as well. Anyway, back to work. I think that there could be something there with Dana if Dana could ever find something to latch onto. She's a decent promo. She's improving. She's not good in the ring, but she is improving. And she definitely has a passion to be there. It's just she didn't have the passion to be there. She would have quit after she got hurt by Asuka down in NXT.
I don't disagree with you, because the little spurts that we've seen her in with the Battle Royals and all that other stuff, when she puts together a few moves, she's not bad. The only problem is she gets exposed when matches go longer or when they speed up a little bit, because she's still not there yet. But, yeah, she's improving. She's showing that she wants to be there. And, you know, she's like at that – she's like that Ava Marie kind of Mandy Rose to a degree kind of level, where they were hired for a look or they were hired for one specific reason and then the wrestling has to come later. And – sadly, sometimes the learning curve is a little steeper than others, dependent on how shit goes for you. And Dana did get kind of thrown to the wolves after Emma got hurt. So I can't blame her completely for her overly greenness.
Well, to be fair, of the three of them, she definitely deserves to have a job more than Alicia Fox.
It's close. I still like Alicia's personality.
I know you're the resident Alicia Fox apologist on this show.
There's no apologizing. I like the way she looks, and I like her crazy personality. There's a spot for it, because shit, the male side has gold dust when he's not got double knee surgery and R-Truth just being goofy, so the women can have something too, but just, yeah. In the ring, she's a little crazy, but then again, when you put her up against, like, Ronda Rousey, who's also a little green and wings people around like she's about to take their body parts off, yeah, none of that's going to look pretty, especially with Alicia.
I'm getting a yes or no from Tony, because we're officially at the end of tonight's episode of Raw.
Woo-hoo!
So, this will literally be stalling for time. I'm going to play a quick song while I wait to hear back from Tony. If we do or don't within the next 3 minutes, you'll know on the other side of this musical break. You're listening to the Raw Reaction here on the Chair Shot Radio Network.
Is this the final scene in our tragic play?
Okay, it appears that Mr. Rosero is a no-go for the evening. Therefore, we will welcome Tony back next week once we're getting closer onto the road to TLC. Predictions for TLC in 2 weeks, by the way, everybody. Again, I'm Harry Broadhurst. He's Andrew Ballas. And it is now time for the final reaction here on tonight's episode of The Raw Reaction, a presentation of the Chair Shot Radio Network. Favorite match or moment tonight, Andrew?
That has to be Rollins versus Ziggler. Like, there really wasn't a lot to work with today.
I'm going to agree with you on Rollins versus Ziggler. I'm going to give an honorable mention to the promo that Gable and Reed cut as well, because I actually thought it was very well done. And I think that if they can get past the stupid... You know what? Let me save that, because I think you know where this is going. Greg Watchery, Andrew. Gee, it's like I just walked myself right into it. May I?
Sure, you have fun with that.
Chad Gable is somebody who's been lost in the shuffle constantly on Raw, especially on the main roster ever since his separation from Jason Jordan. Bobby Roode is somebody who's been completely lost in the shuffle on Monday Night Raw. Occam and Rezar are finding their footing as tag team champions on Raw, but are nowhere near the dominating forces that they were in NXT. This was an opportunity that you could have had on tonight's episode of Raw to have them in a featured match for the tag team titles on the show. A match that was advertised in advance that everybody knew was coming, and some people, myself included, were actually looking forward to because of the fact that these are four very capable athletes. Instead, you make it about Drake Maverick pissing on a robe backstage. fuck out of here. Andrew?
That's as good of an answer as any, and I like the little bit of vigor you added to that, even though I know you're not feeling too well. So, yeah, the whole Drake Maverick pissing on the robe thing, definitely thinking that's a Greg Watry moment right there.
That's as close to pissed off as I can get right now.
Better than being pissed on, like the robe. I'm going to see myself out now.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Andrew's microphone has quit working. I don't know how that happened. Scale of 1 to 10, Andrew.
4. And all 4 of those points go to Seth Rollins and Dolph Ziggler.
I'm right around a 4 as well. I wouldn't say all of them go to Rollins and Ziggler. I mean, I'm still going to give a point to Drew McIntyre just for being Drew McIntyre. And I find Elias very entertaining. Against Bobby Lashley, maybe not so much. But that little stare down that Elias and McIntyre had at ringside during that match, yes, please.
I'll give you that one, sure.
You put those two in a feature match on pay-per-view for 15 minutes, and I'm there.
You just asked a whole hell of a lot to put them in a featured match for 15 minutes.
Especially one on a pay-per-view with no commercials like they would be on Raw, where it would be all commercials, and then we'd come back to Drake Maverick pissing on a goddamn robe!
There we go. There it is. There's Angry Harry.
Who's your MVP tonight, Andrew?
Who is the MVP tonight? Even though it was the best match, I really can't say there was anything MVP about Ziggler and Rollins. McIntyre just kind of fell into the shuffle. Elias is wonderful, but that there really wasn't much to that. So, you know what? I'm going to give it to Alexa, just because I'm not a huge Alexa Bliss fan, but the whole in the business suit with the little bustier corset, whatever the fuck that whole apparatus is called, like, she just looks good. So yeah, what?
I believe that's called America.
America, yeah. But whatever that outfit is, that just all worked for me, and she's just very good in her role. So I'll give it to Alexa. What about you?
Alexa, much the same way, she had the best character work of anybody on the show, including her going around and individually burying members of the WWE Universe, which I thought was hilarious. And the fact that she conducted herself as such an excellent bitch throughout the course of that segment there. Honestly, we talked about this earlier. I stand by it. I think Alexa taking over for Corbin as the full-time general manager on Raw would be a much-needed improvement to the show, because Alexa actually has a character that they could play off of, and because she's not somebody that can book herself or be booked into pivotal matches against members of the main roster talent. You would then get away from the bullshit like you get with Corbin here about the fact that the no disqualification addition to the opening contest, and then the turning it into a handicap match in the main event there. The fuck does Alexa care what happens in the men's division? Alexa just wants to see them beat each other up because she's a vindictive bitch who likes to see people beat each other up.
It's a fair point.
You can step away. You can step away from that tired heel GM cliche that they have running with Corbin right now, and open up a new world of storyline possibilities by giving the control from a figurehead standpoint to somebody like Alexa, even if Stephanie does come back to cut off her ovaries on occasion.
Definitely. And
I must have your
as
balls.
You were just talking. Yes, yes. As you were just talking about it, though, I found another reason why Alexa would be good would also be a way to kind of keep her out of the title picture, because she's already a 5-time women's champion, isn't she? Like,
it's at least 4. It might be 5. I think you're right.
So
I think
we're 1 away
five,
from
twice on.
Yeah,
2.
Twice SmackDown, 3 times Raw, right?
Yeah.
Well, no. But she's 1 away from Mickey, is what I'm saying. She's 1 away from Mickey, and Mickey is 1 behind Charlotte and Trish.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
So, you know, so Alexa's already, what, third place technically in title reigns for the women's championship, whatever we want to call it?
Well,
so that'd be a
theoretically,
nice
theoretically, it would be fourth. Theoretically, it would be fourth since Charlotte and Trish are tied first and Mickey third.
You know what I mean. You know, like, she's still up there in the pantheon when she's only been on the active roster, the main roster, for what, three years? So,
three years.
It's nice to just kind of keep her out of the picture. So, the GM role makes more sense the more you talk about it, because I don't like them just adding on title reigns for no apparent reason, because then it cheapens the title and just makes everything look stupid. So, it's a good way to keep her out of the picture for a couple months.
Well, not to mention she's been basically treated like Ronda's bitch at every turn, too.
That's true, too, because there's literally no way storyline that she could win against Ronda without, like, nefarious means. So, yeah, it definitely makes sense to kind of remove her from that scene.
And that's officially a wrap for the November 26th, 2018 episode of Monday Night Raw. Let's plug a few things before we get out of here, Andrew.
Ooh, plugging a few things. So I guess we should.
Giggity.
Probably should. Hey, plug the home website for this podcast, the Chairshot Radio Network, and many other podcasts, you know, thechairshot.com. That's where you should go for all your news, reviews, and writers with attitudes. Oh, yeah. That's how I did it. And have fun, you know. Harry, how close are we to making some progress?
Hi, I see what you did there.
Hey.
I don't know if that was intentional or not. I assume that it was, but if it wasn't, well played. Just a shade under halfway through Chapter 3.
Nice.
Would have had chapter three finished last week if not for getting sick.
Well, yeah, sick and the holiday and all that stuff, so it's understandable.
So the plan is actually to work on finishing up Chapter 3 tomorrow, and if I can work on getting Chapter 3 finished tomorrow, I should have it uploaded Wednesday or Thursday, and I would assume that would set up Progress Chapter 1 to drop sometime over the course of this weekend.
That would make sense, timeline-wise. So as long as your timeline for 3 works out, then, yeah, I'll make sure 1 drops over the weekend.
In addition, if you want to read any of my reviews over at thechairshot.com, shill. Impact Wrestling's Slammiversary and Bound for Glory 2018 are already available in my writer archives. You can find those by searching for those various shows on the search menu or by looking for me on the author's page. I assume there's an author's page.
Maybe. I have to check. I don't know. I don't actually use that page. So.
we
do
might
the editing. Come on.
Page.
I don't know about no thinking pages. That's a Greg thing.
Well, we're going to have to find out if there's an author's page. And even if there isn't, then I'll make sure that I find a way to link mine anyway.
Nice.
Alternatively, in addition to working on Progress Chapter 3, there are tentative plans for what I watch to go back and follow me along the WWE, WCW, ECW timeline that I'm working on. Nothing's officially set in stone there. I'm not going to plug anything that may or may not be coming there because I don't know if we're going to release these on the Chair Shot or if they're going to be released elsewhere, just because Eric Ames does a lot of the throwback WWF, WCW reviews over at the Chair Shot, and I don't want to step on any toes.
Makes sense.
Tony Acero can be found at 411mania.com during the Raw Report over in the wrestling section. In addition, he writes pretty much wherever he wants to over there because he has carte blanche.
Well, he's telling me.
And I just made myself feel really intelligent by using the phrase carte blanche correctly in a sentence.
You did. I was impressed. Even Tony might give you a point here or there. But, yeah, so good job, Harry.
I will take the credit where I can get it. And you know how they say finish on a high note? That's as high as I'm probably going to get here. So let's go ahead and call this a wrap. Also, real quick, though.
You can listen to Pod is War on the Chairshot Radio Network as well.
You could. We haven't recorded one in a while because of scheduling conflicts, but sure, there's plenty of archives for Pod is War. So catch up while we figure out what the hell we're doing, because new part-time jobs and just life get in the way and make things difficult.
I'm kind of hoping to pick up a second wrestling-themed podcast. I will let everybody know if we actually figure out anything. There is tentative talk of possibly moving my football podcast over to the Chairshot website as well. That depends on what happens where we currently are.
Interesting.
I'll message you more about that off air. I don't want to go into too many details right now.
No, that's what I didn't even know about that. Oh, since we're just talking about interesting movements, and you've been starting to follow progress for us and cover it, and you probably followed beforehand, how do you feel about the news about Walter getting signed possibly to a, you know, WWE contract?
Big Von Walter, I do believe, was the official WXW way of referring to him for the longest time.
Well,
I mean,
yeah,
he definitely
he's Austrian pretending to be German.
Not to mention, he kind of looks like a less fat Vader. Rest
true,
in peace, Vader.
And his tag team is Ringkampf,
nope.
So, you know, that's the whole German thing.
no disrespect meant. Rest in peace, Vader.
Oh, Vader is awesome.
The issue that I see with Walter is that he has so many guys in the WWE already that can basically do the same thing that he does. He stands out as different on the independent circuit right now because the independent circuit these days is not a big man's business. Most of the bigger stars on the indies these days are 6 feet, 6'1", 6'2". I believe Walter is 6'6". And built like a brick shit house, I do believe would be an accurate way to describe it.
I like it.
His body type will not stand out on the main roster. His body type would not stand out on NXT. He does stand out on the indies. He is a phenomenal worker. I have no doubt that he can more than hold his own inside of the ring, and that will help him in NXT. And he does have a cult following, which will help him when he goes to NXT as well. Do I think that he is somebody that will translate to the main scene in the WWE? I do not. How about you, Andrew?
Yeah, I was about to say that. That's more or less how I feel. I feel he'll just be given the stereotypical foreign, like, you know, Kolov or, you know, something like that kind of equated gimmick for nowadays, and just be a big nasty guy who might get a title here or there, and he's just a big tough brute, and that's how he's going to be pigeonholed, so to speak, especially since, as you said, big guys that know how to wrestle aren't exactly, you know, rare in WWE. You know, there's Sheamus, there's Keith Lee now. Cesaro's bigger. Granted, he may not be 6'6", but he's bigger, and he's a technical wrestler. You got Drew McIntyre. Now, granted, Walter will wrestle circles around Braun Strowman, but Braun Strowman looks a little bulkier, so he'll probably still be the quote-unquote monster. And it's just, I don't know. It's par for the course with WWE when it comes to the whole Land of the Giants motif and Vince likes big guys. But I'm not happy about it. Of all people that I wanted to kind of stay indie and kind of build up and be like in that whole Kenny Omega Young Bucks kind of making the indie scene thrive or picking up one company that's not WWE. I was kind of hoping Walter would have stayed, but yeah, he's got to do what he wants to do. If he thinks it's going to be a good opportunity, if the money was too good to pass up, whatever the reason is, good for him. But yeah, I don't see much happening.
6'5", 310 pounds, which puts him as the same size as Drew McIntyre and about 40 pounds heavier.
Yeah, but he's not going to look bigger because McIntyre is cut where, you know, Walter is just big.
I was going to say, to put this into perspective, Braun Strowman is 6'8".
Not that big of a difference.
But enough that it would be noticeable, especially with the bulk difference as well, because Strowman runs about 370.
Point. I didn't know how much he weighed. Yeah, I get where you're going at with it. That's fair.
My point being here is that on the independent, Volter is a giant. In the WWE, he's average-ish, honestly.
Oh, yeah. And Keith Lee runs around that too, doesn't he? Like that whole mid-sixes and like 300 pounds roughly.
I think Keith Lee is 6'3", I believe. Either 6'2 or 6'3". I want to say that Keith Lee and I are the same size, and I'm 6'3". He is billed at 6'2". So there you go. Now we know.
Yeah. So it's all relative. A couple inches here, there ain't going to make that much of a difference. But still, yeah, I'm on the same boat as you, where Walter probably won't make as big of a splash as people think.
All right, let's go ahead and discuss one other little topic as well, since we're kind of getting into the world of independent wrestling here, and I think you might know where I might be about to go with this.
Pizza Hut?
The rumor is the Limited Liability Corporation filings in Florida for All Elite Wrestling, AEW. The belief is that this is the startup company that was rumored to have both Chris Jericho and Jim Ross's support, and to be working with the Elite, the Young Bucks, Kenny Omega, Cody Rhodes, and what has you. The talk is that WWE is going to be going on a full-on marketing blitz in order to pull off anybody of name value to keep them away from AEW, especially after seeing what All In did earlier this year, completely filling up the Sears Center in Rosemont, Illinois. Your thoughts?
We'll see. Like, a one-off event like All In, that's fine. Like, I can imagine getting 10, 11,000 people for it, and half the people that did it was just doing it as a fuck you, to stick it to WWE, to be like, to prove that there's other wrestling and all this other stuff. And don't get me wrong, I'd like to see there be a number two company technically that could literally rival WWE and the Elite's hot right now. But I don't know. I really don't know if branding themselves and making their own wrestling company is the right way to go. Granted, the fact that they've got Shad Khan footing part of the bill, most of the bill, however that works, because he's got more money than God. You know, between owning the Jaguars and still having tons of resources to, you know, help start up a wrestling company. Yeah, that's not a bad person to have, you know, writing your checks. But I don't really know, because the Elite stuff, the mystique is worn off a little bit. And I'm saying that on the whole indie thing and like the being the Elite series, I already see people, as much as they love, you know, the Elite and Kenny Omega and the Bucks, they say that gimmick gets old. Like, some of the jokes are starting to tire out and people just aren't watching anymore because it's just got boring or whatever. So, I don't know. It's a wait and see. I'm not overly interested because most of the people involved, I don't really care. Like, I'm not a big Kenny Omega fan. The Bucks have gotten better this past year, but I'm still not, like, a huge fan of theirs. I love Cody. There's that. But I really could care less, so should be interesting. What about you? Where are you at with it?
If, and it is a colossal if, the promotion ever launches, I give it 6 months. It's going
you're
to run
even
its course
less hopeful quickly than I am.
It's going to run its course very quickly, and the main thing is, too, is there is a three-letter word that determines a lot of stuff in professional wrestling that a lot of people don't consider. E-G-O. And you are dealing with some really big ones when you have the members of the Elite together. I do not see them being able to coexist to the point that they would be able to run a promotion together. We've said this before about other wrestlers. I mean, look at Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, the success that they've had. It started off the basis of six wrestlers putting their money together and wanting to start a promotion in Southern California that people would want to go to. Pro Wrestling Guerrilla just recently celebrated, or it's about to celebrate, I do believe, their 13th anniversary, 14th anniversary. Pro Wrestling Guerrilla worked, but three of those original co-owners are long gone from the company. You get too many cooks in the kitchen trying to stir the pot, and eventually you're going to sour your recipe. That's going to be the problem with AEW. There are going to be too many people trying to put their spin on the way things should go there, and it's going to turn a bunch of people against the product that they do eventually put out, if one ever sees the light of day.
And I was thinking this is very similar to WCW. And I mean that in the respect that the click essentially ran the 90s. Like, if there was no click, there'd be no Attitude Era. That argument can be made. But it's because of Hall and Nash and the attitude, the realism they brought over to WCW, and then that whole company turned into their show. It was the inmates running the asylum. It was Hall, Nash, Hogan, and Bischoff, and that's who everything went through. And this is similar, but instead of taking over, quote-unquote, a company, you're building up on a Hall, Nash, Hogan, and Bischoff kind of mentality. So are they? Do they know what went wrong in WCW? Yes, because especially if Jericho is involved, he was there. Cody was probably there as a child too when, you know, Dusty was still in WCW. So there's some things that could be learned. There's some excitement. There's some intrigue. But eventually I think it falls the same way that WCW did. Granted, I think it might last a little longer than 6 months. I think that's underselling the hatred the IWC has for WWE, and the Bucks and all them could put out the worst product and blow up and, you know, have all these problems. People still throw money at whatever the hell they're doing. So I think it's longer than six, less than 5 years. That's kind of where I'm going to go. That's kind of the over under thing. Under five, over 6 months.
Well, you know how I said that if it ever launches?
Correct.
Because I wouldn't be surprised to see Cody, Kenny, and the Bucks show up at the Royal Rumble next year.
So do you think they got the trademarks just to protect it?
I think it's entirely possible, or alternatively, to use it as kind of a smokescreen for their eventual move to the WWE.
That's a fair point. It's a heavy smoke screen, but, you know, I could see it.
Nick and Matt Jackson aren't getting any younger. They're going to want to work a contract where they can have a limited amount of dates and able to work with the biggest talents on the biggest stages inside of the company here. And they know they have the name value to be able to work out a contract like that with the WWE, be it on the main roster in the WWE or be it through NXT working with Triple H. Cody Rhodes is somebody who has been told that he has an open door policy to return to the company whenever he wants to. Triple H has gone on the record stating that one of the biggest mistakes the developmental company has ever done is cutting Kenny Omega. There are plenty of opportunities for all four of those men should they make the move to the big leagues over here in the United States. And as I understand, all four of their contracts with New Japan expire at Wrestle Kingdom next year.
Roughly.
So it could be a situation much like we saw with AJ Styles and Shinsuke Nakamura, where they work Wrestle Kingdom, and then both of them have defected to the WWE by WrestleMania. Styles appearing at the Royal Rumble later that month. Shinsuke debuting at NXT TakeOver.
Which is fine, which is plausible. So, yeah, that's definitely wait and see. I'm somewhat intrigued, but I'm not nearly as hyphy as some people.
I have an Edge and Christian show that reeks of awesomeness to watch.
You should do that.
Did you watch season one?
I did watch season one, yes.
It was entertaining. Hopefully season two lives up to season one.
It wasn't bad. I think my favorite little skit was them with Stardust in the closet, I guess, interrogating him under the red light. And then just randomly at the end of the gimmick, he's just like, "So, do I get a hand job?" or something like that. I'm like, okay, that's random. Like, I don't remember Stardust being funny.
I think my favorite one was Bailey going ape on Christian with the kendo stick.
Oh, that wasn't bad. I agree. And then what, the Sean Mooney one? That was pretty good, too.
It's primetime wrestling.
Exactly. But alrighty, so let's wrap things up here since we just prattled about for a little bit.
Yeah, it's Raw reaction here. It's not just about Raw. We talk about other things relatable in the wrestling world.
Fair.
I managed to not die, so there's that.
That's an accomplishment within itself, yes.
For somebody that was only supposed to produce tonight, I think I did an okay job. I only had to cut my microphone twice mid-sentence in order to avoid you guys catching me hacking up a lung over here.
Mm-hmm. No,
he's Andrew Ballas. He's the third man, Andrew Ballas. For the absent Down Since Day One co-host Tony Acero, I'm Harry Broadhurst, thanking you for listening to The Raw Reaction, a presentation of the Chairshot Radio Network. Send us home, Andrew.
Deuces, bitches.
I'm still broken.
You have been listening to The Raw Reaction here on the Chairshot Radio Network. Join us again next Monday night at 11:30 p.m. Eastern as Harry Broadhurst, Tony Acero, and Andrew Ballas present The Raw Reaction, an affiliate of thechairshot.com.
Hey, that actually helps my announcer voice. Not that I recommend being sick to anybody, but it did help me hit the announcer voice a little bit stronger than I normally do. It's Harry. Thanks for listening. Catch you next Monday. Good night, everyone.